We're going to talk about anger first. We're going to talk about managing strong emotions, and of course the emotion that most of us have to work on in terms of dealing with previous partners is anger, frustration, irritation, annoyance, rage. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to discuss what anger is, how it affects us as co-parents. I may have something in there about children. Some of our ideas about how anger works, things we need to know about ourselves. Because really, when we talk about managing anger, it's about me controlling me. Knowing where I'm at, when I need to stop. Making choices about what I'm going to do with this emotion. Always. Always making choices. Why are we so angry? Well, there are lots of reasons we as co-parents can be angry. You know, first of all, our relationship didn't work. We didn't get into the relationship for it not to work, but we're months or years down the road, and we just don't get along. And we decide, one of us, both of us, decide that, you know, we need to part ways and not be in this relationship you and I have. There's a lot of anger, frustration associated with the change in finances. A lot of this happens at the beginning in terms of the significant change, because I go from being with you and having the income that we have to having to be self-supporting, to having to get child support set up, having to get maybe have to get a job or get a second job and figuring out how I'm going to do this. Down the road, sometimes the anger becomes the child support, the alimony, the income that I'm supposed to be getting from the co-parent, and maybe it's not coming regularly. You know, maybe they say they're not working, and I really believe that they are working and they're getting paid under the table and they're reporting far less, and so, you know, you're not taking care of your kids. On the flip side of that, if I'm the one paying the child support, you know, I may have anger and frustration that I don't think it's being used right over there, and think that I should have some input into how you spend that money. So we can have frustration on the side of either parent in terms of money, and this can be an ongoing bone of contention between us. We may have some anger about the change in the parental roles. You know, I may have been the primary parent for the child doing most of the care, and now I have the children are in daycare or school. I'm having to do things in terms of managing them that I didn't have to do before. Sometimes one parent is less involved. And I won't say that it's strictly men, because I do meet some dads that are very involved with their children. I'll tell you a lot more, though, still aren't doing a lot of that nurturing. I was just reading in Parent and Child magazine, it comes home with my kids this week, about the roles and shared parenting, and still, in 2007, the survey still showed that women carry more of the household responsibilities and work than most of their male partners. Still in 2010. So they're still doing more. The frustration can be for the parent that maybe isn't so used to doing so much that they have to figure out how to do so much with the kids. You know, when it's my turn, when the kids are with me, I have to know how to feed them and get them ready for bed, and you know, that they have this practice over here and they have that practice and that kind of thing. So sometimes we don't always see that distinction where we have a weekend parent or a weekend dad that spends all the fun time with the kids and then the parent that has to maintain them. We're seeing some blending of that more now. We don't get any time off, though, do we? Unless we've remarried and have another partner to help out. But we don't get any time off. I can't look at you and say, hey, I'm going to go take a shower and know that you've got them. Now, when the kids are with me, if I'm going to take a shower, you know, nobody's got them. I'm leaving the door open, my ear crack. Come and get me if. Lots of times we delegate to older children, keep an eye on and, you know, come get me if, you know, somebody sets the toaster on fire or whatever. So we don't get any time off when the children are with us. When there's a lack of predictability that you'll actually show up. So I'm sitting, I have plans, I'm really hoping that you'll show up like you said you would, but it's kind of iffy because you have a pattern of not coming when you're supposed to, either being late, calling at the last minute. You wanted to change the plans and I told you that I wasn't agreeable to that. So I'm left waiting because did we really resolve this and is it really going to go like I expected? All those things can be part of this conflict that happens with parental roles. When we talk about anger, you know, most of the anger that we have is repeat. Most of the things that we experience anger about, we've experienced anger about before. Not too many of us have new anger issues very often. It's the same old stuff over and over. Did you have a new one this week, Jenna?
Negative.
It's my new term, negative. Okay. We potentially get stuck in the old patterns. We attempt to solve the problem. We attempt to get around it. We attempt to manage it in the same way we've been trying to do it, which isn't working. Because if it was working, we wouldn't have a problem anymore, and I wouldn't be having anger about it anymore. So what we're doing isn't very effective. Stress in our lives increases our risk for irritability, for frustration more easily. Stress in our life. We haven't talked about stress, but we will be. You know, and these are the long-term stuff going on that I have to be aware of and plan for, and the short-term stuff that may happen day to day, or I got this coming up this week and I'm aware of it and it's taking some of my mental energy. Stress that we feel increases the risk that we'll get irritable, snap at people more quickly, get angry, say and do things that maybe we wouldn't if our stress level wasn't all the way up to here. When we talk about anger, I'm going to define things, okay? Because there are distinctions here, and I want you to know how I think about this. When we look at the ways that we show anger, we can show anger by being hostile to another person. Hostile, and there's my definition. Non-physical ways of treating someone with contempt in order to punish or shame them. Non-physical. So I'm not reaching out and touching you, but I put on my glare, and I'm going to do I call it eye chicken. I'm going to stare you down. I put on my eyebrows down. I put on my frown, my scowl. I let you know here that I'm upset about something. Then we also put on the posture. Think about what you look like when you get angry. You know, do you stand rigid? Do you fold your arms? Do you cross your leg? Do you tap your foot? Do you put your hands on your hips? I mean, we have all kinds of ways, and we know how we signal people that, you know, I'm really angry. Think about the look you may use on your children. Most of us have a look for our children when they're doing things we don't like. And we've done it enough that they get it. You know, that's like the cease and desist look. Stop now, because if you don't, there's more to come. We do that with people. And we know what this are. And you know what? Our co-parent knows what this look is about too. And so we may start out there. My signal that I'm just not very happy. So, you know, these are non-physical. Some of that indirect criticism may be here. Sarcasm is a form of hostility. Sarcasm. That's what comes to my mind, at least initially. I'm sure I'll think of some more stuff with hostility. Now, aggression, look at my definition, the physical act of harming another intentionally. The physical act of harming another intentionally. Now, there are a few things that aren't actually physical. However, they are emotionally harming. I don't have to touch you to blame you. When we talk about you, I open my mouth, I have my whole hostile thing going on, and then I start in with this you, that direct criticism stuff. I consider that aggressive. Think about how you feel when somebody does that. You this and you that and you always. So they have the face, they have the posture, they have the tone, they have the hardness. They may be crossing space, they may be pointing their finger. Our emotional defenses go up. We're trying to figure out, you know, how to avoid this one or how to fight back. That's defensiveness. And so I consider blaming an aggressive act, although it is not a physically aggressive act. I consider purposeful hang-ups an aggressive act. Those tend to be enraging for the person on the other end of the phone. I am not going to let you treat me this way. And if I'm not careful with what I'm doing, you know, I'm calling them back, leaving them voicemail. It's full now. I'm still calling them. You know, what does that do for me? I'm a nut. I consider that aggressive because when you do that, it is with the intent to punish you. That's why I hung up and I wanted you to know it. I consider spitting aggressive. Some people say, well, spitting would be contact. And yes, technically it is. Some people say, well, spitting is not. But spitting's pretty aggressive. I mean, who would I actually, what would it take for me to spit on someone?
Usually if I spit on me, oh man.
I've never had that happen.
I did. I'm sorry.
It doesn't happen in all circles, but I'm hearing about it a lot more. And just as this young man says, ooh, I've had that happen, and let me tell you what. I mean, those are like fighting words for him. He's gonna bust you. It is disrespect. With intent. With intent. I consider that pretty low, though. Pretty low. When we think about aggression and we start talking about the physical stuff, this becomes more obvious. You know, when low-level aggression happens, when you try to walk away from me and I take you by the arm. And this is how people will describe it. I didn't want him to walk away. I took him by the arm. Did he or she want you to touch him? No. We're having a disagreement. I don't want you to touch me. So that meets our qualification of aggression. It's unwanted. Poking. I've had people get poked in the chest. I had one person tell me when they got into an argument, he poked her in the forehead. And I'm thinking, I would have a hard time controlling myself there. I have a hard time personally with that talk to the hand thing. Truly, I find that very disrespectful. And that's another thing that I kind of list in aggression instead of hostility. Any kind of touch, though, poking, taking them by the arm. I think another form of aggression that is not physical is blocking a doorway. You know, in this particular room, there's only one exit. None of us are going out the window. So if I want to control you or control what's going on here, I may position myself between you and the door. And I've essentially trapped you in the space. That's aggression. And in homes, think about how things work. You know, most of the smaller areas in homes only have one entrance in and one entrance out. When you're in the kitchen, you may have two. When you're in the main living area, you may have two where you can get to another area. Some homes only have one entrance, like my building here has the front entrance. Some homes only have one entrance if you live on the second floor. There isn't a balcony, there isn't anything else. So that can be a real aggressive act. And then back to the physical. Touching, holding, slapping, scratching, biting. It goes up from there. You know, it gets more aggressive as I close my hand and come at you. When I stick something in my hand, now I've armed myself with a weapon. You know, and so I have people that will minimize that. I had one person that was using one of those feather dusters. And wanted to minimize that was what was in their hand. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, did you hit him with the feather duster? Well, yeah, then that's a weapon. But that didn't hurt. You don't understand. It's something not natural to you in your arm and you're hitting a person with it. That's a weapon. When we talk about how we experience anger, we're going to look at these three methods. Suppressed anger, expressed anger, and controlled anger. And this is where we get into controlling myself and managing my anger. Because these are about how I demonstrate my anger to others. Okay? So when we look at this idea of suppressed angry people, and you're going to think back to your conflict style here, what do I do when I get into an argument? And some of this will tie into that personality test that you took. Are you an extrovert? Are you an introvert? Because part of our personality feeds into how do we actually do this kind of stuff, and then how has it gone in this relationship, the patterns that we've gotten into. So when we look at a suppressed angry person, these individuals tend to be more quiet when they get angry. They don't tend to say a whole lot. The other person can see that they're angry, but when I ask you, are you mad at me? You're going to tell me no. No, I'm not mad. Did you hear my tone? Do I sound mad? I sure don't sound happy. Okay, that could be considered sarcastic. That's a passive-aggressive technique. I look one way. My words don't match the way I look. So that is done by a person that is suppressing their anger. They're going to hold it here. They don't want to say anything, but I physically, all the hostility is there for you to know that I'm unhappy. You see there, we use heavy facial expression and body language. So my posture may not be very good. My facial expression isn't going to be very good, even if I am talking about it. We'll deny that we're angry. We punish others around us covertly. Okay, I'm banking on that you're going to have some feeling that you're uncomfortable with, like maybe you feel guilty. We punish those around us by trying to evoke some feeling that they've had in your past. Now, I don't make you feel what you feel, but I know you well enough to know that when we've had this argument in the past, that this is what you felt, and this is how you responded. And that's how we can get this idea that people make us angry. They don't actually. These are people that know us well, so they've seen it before. They've experienced this anger in this situation before, and so, you know, they make an educated guess. A suppressed angry person will act like they're a victim, as though they have no control over the situation, over the problem, over the other person. There's nothing I can do. They may draw in other people around them, other family members. This is where I may draw in the kids, because I'm a suppressed angry person, and if I tell them, then they'll tell, and this will make, and this is the realm that suppressed angry people kind of operate out of.
Dealing with that from the other side.
Yes, it is. It is hard dealing with a suppressed angry person because they don't talk a whole lot. They want to avoid dealing with it, and they may want to be avoiding it, as you've kind of shared, for their own purposes. If I avoid it, then I don't have to change. I don't have to make any decisions, and I don't have to give any ground. The benefit there is that when I suppress my anger and avoid, then nothing is going to change, at least not immediately. And then you have to decide how you're going to deal with this.
Well, that suppression comes out in some ways, right?
The suppressed anger, as ulcers. Lots of times, sometimes what will happen is this person who suppresses, holds it in, finally gets to the point where they've had enough. And so what happens is they get into an argument. Maybe they have more stress. We're having a discussion about something we've had issues with before. And you know what? Today just really wasn't a good day for me. You have no idea what's going on with me today. And today I am not taking your crap. So when you pull that stuff that you always pull, I've had enough. And this is when you'll see the next one, which is an expressed angry person. Expressed angry people are hostile and aggressive. We can pick these people out because they're not quiet. They tend to raise their voices, they yell and scream, they may curse, they name call, they're directly critical, they're in your space, they're all over you. They're not going to drop it. These may be our competitors, this may be our agitator.
On the other one, right?
You are more of a suppressed person, right? Because you avoid and you don't want to talk about it, and you'd rather duck out if possible. Okay? Expressed angry people tend to make the people around them uncomfortable because they do get loud, and they're very demonstrative about their anger, and they don't keep it down, and they don't keep it quiet, which means anybody in the immediate area is aware of that person over there.
See, that's what makes people snap, though. I mean, because I can be cool, calm, collected, but when that get all that screaming coming for me, I'm like, oh man, that makes me snap. When I get all that screaming, yelling, I'm like,
You want to shut down, or you start screaming and yelling back?
No, I tear up. That one, like, shut up.
You come back, and this is the person that normally would say nothing that now has had enough.
Can you even mix that one?
Yes, you can. Okay. It can depend upon what's going on today, what my stress is like now. Did I see this one coming? Am I prepared? You know, when I'm going to drop off the kids, and it's always rough. It's not the time for me to get into any kind of a discussion with you, and yet here you come with an item you want to talk about, and I already don't do well with you. There's an issue that's come up that you haven't responded to my email about, and, you know, we got to have an answer, and so I'm going to talk about this when I see you or when this occurs, and it's going to be when the kids are there, because you won't answer me any other way. And you hear my tone change. You hear that harshness come out, and you would fully expect, if I'm talking to you as my friend about this, and that's what I sound like, that it's probably only going to get worse when I go talk to my co-parent about it, because of my own mental state. This is where I'm at. I've had enough. They're not responding. I'm not going to be treated like this. I got to have a decision. And so I'm going to push the issue. That's the express person.
But sometimes people don't mean to snap, but they just like do it because after a while you hear the same thing or the same thing happening after a while.
That's part of that pattern. That's right. I've had enough. It's going nowhere. It happens this way all the time. I'm done.
But it's like the other person. I think what you're saying, They're like driving you that way on purpose.
Mm-hmm. They may be having one of their days where they're looking for a reaction from you. And so I may push you, test you, hit the buttons to get you to do something.
Oh, every day for me.
It can be. Because your co-parent is probably more of an agitator now. Not really necessarily in it to win, but certainly in it to get a rise out of you. So because you want to avoid, and you've done that in the past, that doesn't work. So now I'm gonna chase you down, and you start coming at her because avoiding didn't work. You've already talked about what that looks like, so we know that there's this toxic stuff going on.
I try to hide because if she's, I knew it's gonna be. See, I gotta get out of Tampa though, man. Because I know if she see me in Tampa and I got some girl by my side, oh, I already know it's going down. I'm talking about it. Oh, they gonna have to call a SWAT team, somebody out there, because I know it's gonna go down. And she already told me, let me catch you around.
Yeah. That's a threat. I'd take her serious.
So ain't be the last time you gonna be seeing this earth. I was like, oh,
okay. We talked about the direct verbal stuff with no hesitation. The you, the hostility, the in your face. Okay. Express people tend to be single-sided. They know what they want, and they are gonna let you know what they want, and they're gonna exert pressure to get what they want. And if it requires that the people around hear it all, then that's what it's gonna take. Meanwhile, if the other end is the suppressed person, shh, they're trying to get them, shh, before they run. And then they're going to figure out how to leave, if they can. Expressed angry people then use the other person or the situation to justify their actions. Well, if you had just answered my email, then I wouldn't have to scream at you when you come to pick up the kids. We wouldn't have had to have the discussion at all. It's your fault. That's an expressed angry person. It's your fault that I'm acting the way I'm acting. I'm here to tell you it's not. It's not their fault. These are choices that we make. We always have choice about what we do with our anger. The anger, the feeling is not the issue. The choices that we make about what we do with it are the issue. Because these are the things that don't help you and I get along better. These are the things that don't help the situation. These are the expressions that potentially get the police involved or Child Protective Services involved, or a court involved, because one or both of us can't figure out how to control ourselves and know when to stop and treat each other with some degree of respect. When I talk about a controlled person, this in my mind is the positive way to deal with your anger. This will not get you arrested. This will not get you losing control of yourself. These kinds of things will help you to maintain control of you. And that's what I'm going to ask you to always keep in the forefront, that you're making a decision. You know what? If you're having a ratty day and you choose to have that argument, you go on. I'm telling you, though, there are other ways that I don't have to have that argument. And for you, I think it's more important for you to always maintain control of yourself. Part of getting away from these relationships is to disengage from all of this emotion, to be kind of neutral, like Switzerland. Got it. I hear you over there. We know what we can affect. We know what we can affect. We've talked about that. I can't affect what you do over in your household. I may not like it. I've talked to you about it. It's not changing. I have to let go of that because I can't affect that over there. If you're not unsafe, I can't affect that over there. I'm not unsafe. You can talk all you want. Doesn't mean I'll change anything. When we talk about listening, we're going to talk about how you deal with this. Controlled angry people regulate. I'm aware when I have when I'm having a stressful day. You know, when I have something coming up, I know in the morning of the day I have a lot of stuff going on that I, number one, need to be more careful. Because I will be more irritable. I'll be more snippy with people if I'm not aware. I'm more likely to raise my voice. I'm more likely to express or suppress anger in unhealthy ways. And I've learned to identify that because I've been doing this for a while. You always have to gauge where you're at. You know, so if you're finding that there's a lot of fuzz, white noise around you, you're feeling a little more agitated, you're feeling a little more jumpy, you feel like you're having a bad day, that should clue you in that you might have to slow down a little bit so that you make better choices about what you do with people coming, asking you questions, things that come up on this given day, because you're a little closer to the edge. Always got to be aware of where I'm at. We need to know what our warning signs are that we're getting angry. You know, how do you know when you're getting angry? What's it feel like for you?
Frustrating. I get really aggravated.
And how do you know you're aggravated? Like, for example, I start to sweat. I can tell when I'm getting angry because I get hot.
I get headaches.
Okay, that's a good sign. So if you recognize I'm getting one of those headaches, you could identify it. That's because I'm getting angry. Okay, how about you? How do you know when you're getting angry?
Let's see.
Hopefully it's before you pull the gun out from the hiding place. You laugh. I'll tell you my story here in a second. How do you know when you're getting angry?
When I stop laughing.
When you stop laughing. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, everybody know me. I'm always smiling, joking around. So when they don't see me smiling and joking around, everybody like, oh, what's wrong with Mike?
Okay. You get more serious. Yeah. And that can be that's a good cue. How about you?
I get serious. My heart. I just feel my blood boiling.
Okay. So you feel it, your heart moving a little faster. Good. Those are all good cues. I've heard a lot of variation from things like I feel my heart pounding, I get headaches, I feel my ears get hot, to I'm screaming, I'm cursing, to I'm throwing things. I think the most extreme one I heard was what I threw hit the wall, and the person was serious. That was their cue that they were angry. They were throwing things across the room. Gotta catch it a lot earlier than that. And she did. In 6 months, she could catch herself as she was yelling, which in my mind is a big improvement from potentially hurting somebody as I'm throwing things across the room. Okay. So we need to know our cues. How do I know when I'm getting angry? Because that's when I need to decide what I'm going to do about it. People that are working to control their anger are really interested in solving the problem. That remains their focus. How do I solve this problem? Can this be something that I can work to compromise with my co-parent? Can this be something that we can collaborate, work together to figure out a solution to this? Is this something that we can even talk about today? Sometimes they're not good. Big problems that have been there for a while, I call those hot topics. They're not going to be solved easily. I'm not going to be able to look at you and in 5 minutes this 2-year-old problem go away. It's not going to happen. There's going to be some kind of a process to getting that one done. Where we start is with smaller problems. You know, the recital that's coming up a week from Friday. You know, the birthday party that's going to be on the weekend that you have the kids. Things like that. Small problems that we can address fairly easily for how do we solve this. I see the look. Because there's not a lot of, in your mind, not a lot of hope there. The answer is going to be no, because this is when it's happening. And, you know,
this is my day with the kids, and of course you're not coming to their birthday party. It's my day, my time.
Yep.
If you don't like it, go get an attorney.
Yep. And your modification can be, you know, not we don't always get to see our kids, and we don't always get along well enough that we can be in the same space with their other parent on their birthday, and we may not be able to share the kids on the birthday. I see that a lot. They're with me, or this year they're with me on their birthday, next year they're with you, and so you're not seeing them on their birthday. And this is where we have to set some stuff up and say, well, okay, how do I celebrate this with my child? And I choose another time, and I let go of it, and it's fine. I don't even need to worry about that. Can't affect that over there, but I can take care of this over here, and my kids can know that they're important to me and that this is a special day. You know, think about how we do birthday parties. Most kids' birthday parties are on weekends, no matter if their birthday's on Tuesday or Saturday. For that reason, lots of kids I won't take my child to a birthday party during the week, but I'll plan it for the Saturday. It's really no different. How am I going to celebrate this event with my kid? It's not going to be that. So, you know, we're solving that problem. Have we been able to compromise or collaborate? No. I've chosen to solve it another way. Am I going to maintain the anger about that? I don't really need to. Just eating me up. So we stay focused on problem solving. We need to be able to identify unwinnable situations. Now, I'll tell you honestly, I think somebody coming at you with a knife is probably an unwinnable situation. How do I get out of this? Somebody that refuses to lower their voice, that refuses to treat me with respect, that's unwinnable. I don't have to stick around for that. Don't have to stick around for it. I don't have to tolerate that kind of behavior. There, you know, we have to be careful because sometimes there's some manipulation there on the part of the other parent that, well, you don't want to listen to me at all. And so, okay. Doesn't mean I still don't try to set limits. This is not acceptable behavior. And, you know, with the other parent, bring the kids in. This is not helping the kids to hear and see this. This is not helping for this to occur when they're around. I'm going to ask you not to do it in front of them. You want to talk to me offline over here? I'm willing to hear what you have to say. I still will set the limit over here. You know, I don't want you yelling at me. I don't want you cursing at me. So if you can tell me what you want to tell me, I'm willing to hear it. And then I try to hear it. All right, we got to look at the bigger picture. Controlled people look at the bigger picture. In this case, you know, we're really looking for taking care of our children. It doesn't help for you and I to continue to have these kinds of arguments. The bigger picture is I'm not available for my children. I don't have a quality relationship with them. They're aware of all this conflict. I'm teaching them how to continue to not get along with somebody. I can't affect you, but I can control me. I can control me. Your children will figure it out as they watch and see who's doing what and who's doing what. And as they mature, they'll figure out who's doing what. You don't have to tell them. You don't have to share it all with them. You know, you have to be a fair parent and be a good parent and establish a relationship with your kids and work to be fair with your co-parent and let go of what you can't control. The rest of it will take care of itself. Your kids will come back to you when they're adults and say, you know, I saw what you did and I understand now. They will figure it out. Controlled people tend to be long-term focused, which really is, what's the benefit going to be down the road? Do I want my kids having 3 and 4 relationships and 4 kids with 3 different people and, you know, they can't maintain it? Or do I want them to do better at relationships than their dad and I did, their mom and I did? I want my kids to do better than I've done. And that doesn't just apply to making money and having a better quality of life. It has to do with living successfully. Who do you think's angrier, the person that yells or the person that keeps it in?
Me.
The person that keeps it in? Why do you think that?
Because when they get that angry level, ain't nobody going to stop them. See, because the person that's just doing it, they doing that rah-rah, they running that gator because they trying to get you mad. But the person who's really angry now, he going to be, when he get to that angry point, he ain't going to be just sitting there talking. Because now they going to start playing fist the cuffs and around them.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jenna?
The anger.
The quiet person or the person that yells and screams?
The one that yells and screams.
Is the angrier person? How about you?
I think they're the same.
I think the quieter person is potentially the more angry person. And Mac was kind of on the right track. Here's why. The express person, they're going to tell you when it's happening. You know right away that they're angry and what they're angry about. The suppressed person shows you that they're angry, doesn't talk about it. And this goes on and on. When they finally flip and let it out, it is amazing what they have been holding in. I mean, stuff that was no big deal to you is there, and it's a big deal to them. There's stuff there you didn't even know is there, and they kind of unload. They're kind of like a volcano. It just all comes out in all kinds of directions. And as Max says, you know, sometimes they're unstoppable. These are the people who never look angry to other people. I never would have imagined that this person could do that because they switch flips and They are doing things truly that you've never seen, never thought. They have never even pictured themselves doing some of the things and saying some of the things that they say when it gets tripped.
Like they say on the streets, man, it's the worst person to fight is a scary person, because you don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's good too.
No, we're just talking about, like, if you back someone into a corner. I remember years ago, I saw something about that.
Backing them into a corner?
You back a very frightened person into a corner, and then they explode out on you.
Yeah, scary person. That's why when people ever do all that, we worry about him.
Because we know what's going on there.
Yeah, that scary person, that one that keeps quiet, that's the one we be worried about. Because we don't know what they're going to do.
That's right, we don't.
I guess that is true, because I'm the person that holds it in, and my ex likes to let it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I'm at a point, like, I'll be the one that's holding the arms, and then he knows I'm angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll just say what he wants to say, and I just hold it in, and then he pushes the button. And then that's when I just, like, I'm gone. That's it. Can't climb me up. And then he enjoys it, because he likes to get me angry. So I guess I can see it that way.
And that's an agitator, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm delighted when I get a rise out of you, and I continue to egg you on. Now I don't have to yell and scream when you're doing it. Mm-hmm. I can just poke a little here and poke a little there, and oh, this is exciting. Yeah, that's an agitator.
Yeah.
They're not fun. Agitators are no win.
Because
they don't want to solve anything. They want to get you going and then poke at you and keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other idea, and this one's important. When we talk about, these are kind of, another word for these would be triggers. People, topics, situations that I have anger about and with. One of the people in your life is your co-parent. Okay? They are a trigger for you. Because we have a history of not resolving problems. We have a history of not getting along. We have a history of not agreeing on how this should go with our children. We have history. Those kinds of things are the topics. The visitation, the financial support, the where they're going to go to school, the who can see their grades, the who can pick them up. All of the stuff on your punch list that we haven't been able to resolve goes right there with topic. Situations occur when it's happening again, when we're exchanging the children and we try to talk about this, when I know the grade cards are out and I didn't get the grades, when I sent brand new clothes and they don't come back. Situations occur, and lots of times they are based on the topic. As you start combining these, when you get your co-parent and something that we can't resolve and the situation is happening again, you're extremely high risk for showing your anger in the ways that you're used to doing it. Which means if you're a suppressed person, you put on the face, and your co-parent knows that you're upset. And they know why, because we've been here, we've done this, and it's me. They may not be able to verbalize it like that, but they've got it. When I'm an expressed anger person, it's you, it's happening, and I'm going to start raising my voice and getting in your face. When you're a controlled angry person, I recognize that I had to see you, meet you, talk to you. I know that in the past, these have been rough times. This topic is an open item, and I should probably predict that it's going to come up while we're anywhere near each other. So I need to have a plan for how I'm going to get out of this unwinnable situation. Because we don't resolve problems when all three of these things are in place. The risk is too high. One of us is going to act out and lose control, guaranteed. One of us will be doing the thing we always do. It's not likely we're going to be able to compromise or collaborate or resolve that problem at that point. Not likely. If we're going to do those kinds of things, I have to do this at a time when I can have a conversation with you about this separate of something else happening. When we lower our risk, when we can take one of these things away. We were talking about this last week with your daughter when I asked you to talk to you about maybe role modeling, because she wants to talk to her dad. So in this case, we'd be wanting to take him out of the picture, talk about the topic and the situation so that we can practice. That's getting rid of this one. Okay? When I know I have to exchange the kids and I say, you know, I don't want to talk about any of the stuff that we have problems with, now I'm attempting to remove that topic one. You and the situation is this child exchange for visitation. Those are enough. I don't need to do anything else. So when you can take one of them out, we do drop our risk. Is it gone completely? No. We still have huge scorecards with these people. We still have issues that we haven't been able to resolve. We may still have anger just with this person that is there constantly to have to be around them or think about them. But those are triggers. Those are the things that we have to be aware of as we work with this idea of, you know, I need to learn to control myself, and I have to learn to let go of this anger and decide how I'm going to deal with this.